The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Thursday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to tell you why in the betting markets, revenge is almost always a dish best served cold. Should it be bowling for dollars in Honolulu? No, that's not quite right. How about beach blanket bingo for bucks? That was harder than I thought. And the best way to spend your Thursday night, sit back, pour yourself a Cutty Sark, and watch a winner sail home.
Dave, huge night of action on the hardwoods last night, but your first take, not necessarily basketball related. You want to lay into this revenge angle thing again, don't you?
Well, it's something that we thought was going to happen, and we said early in the week, don't bring it up for the Super Bowl. But we know a lot of people are going to. They're going to do it on TV. They're going to do it on the Internet. And what do I get when I unwrap the USA Today this morning? Headline in the sports section talking about Patriot revenge. Now, that it directly applies to a game tonight we're going to talk about, and we're going to save the concepts behind revenge for when we get to Orlando-Boston coming up in the first money time. But guys, when it's a playoff game, don't ever, ever, ever bring it up. Don't send us an email in a playoff game saying, what about this revenge factor? And if you're coming to the Super Bowl party, and we want you to, we know a lot of you have responded, it's going to be a lot of fun. But if any of you come up to Teddy or myself and ask us, what do you think the revenge factor means for the Super Bowl? Okay, Jacob here, not only going to be at the party, but he's going to be our bouncer. If we hear you bring up revenge, you're going to have to deal with him, and you don't want that. So if Jacob tells you that it's time for you to leave the party, then it is. Leave quietly, leave politely, and thank him for letting you merely be there in the first place. We'll talk about a lot of aspects to this Super Bowl. Revenge will not be one of them. A lot going on last night. Some that caused some aggravation, I'm sure. You like Vinny Del Negro fouling with 1 second left?
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Enjoyed that.
Of all those, which one do you bring in?
We got to talk about today. I'm not going to talk about last night. I don't even want to think about last night right now. I'm not going to talk about 4 of 34 shooting from the first half in Arkansas. They were double-digit favorites, and they shot 4 of 34. No. Today is a special day in Las Vegas. Now, Super Bowl is like Christmas for sports bettors. It really is, around the globe, because it's not just the game, it's not just the side and the total and the money line. It's the props for Super Bowl that make it such a unique event. And here in Las Vegas, Jay Cornegay used to be at the Imperial Palace. He's been at the Hilton now for about a decade. He has been instrumental in turning what used to be, you know, maybe a one-sheet list of props into this behemoth with hundreds and hundreds of proposition wagers. Those numbers all come out tonight at the Hilton. Now, you have these special days in Vegas, and I call them wise guy parties. You know, and you know it's a wise guy party when they're all wearing the wise guy suit, which is, no, not a suit and tie. It's a beat-up old track suit. Wise guy wallet, no, it's not the regular wallet sitting in your pocket. It's a stack of hundreds wrapped in a thick rubber band. You know, that's how we dress. That's what we wear. But we talk about wise guy parties. It used to be Sunday night at the Stardust, where the lines, the first numbers would come up Sunday night at the Stardust, and it was a scene to be seen, you know, really. And I encouraged anyone that would come to visit me in Vegas or come into town, you got to check out the Stardust on Sunday nights because there's nothing else like it. It's literally dozens of the best, most successful sports bettors in the world racing against each other to get the best of the number. Well, the Stardust has been imploded, and it's no longer in existence. But you still have these kind of little holidays in Vegas every once in a while. Dave and I had lunch the day that the Golden Nugget put out the college football games of the year, the first college football numbers to show up anywhere this past summer. That was a feeding frenzy. Going to the Nugget, there's eight deep awaiting to get their bets down off those inaugural numbers. The MGM opened up the NFL win totals first. And again, a feeding frenzy as wise guys, big stacks of hundies coming in there making limit bets on as many teams as they can get down on or they have opinions on. Tonight's one of those nights at the Hilton. If you're here in Las Vegas, I encourage you, stop by, check it out. It is quite a scene, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, time for Market Watch, and we want to start Market Watch today with a good question here from Sherman, who sent an email, and he asks, do you think a good capping strategy for beginners would be to pick a smaller conference, like the CAA, the Colonial Athletic Conference, and become an expert on it and cap those games? I feel like the book edge would be smaller on those games. I also know they'll have much lower limits, but most of us amateur cappers aren't max betting anyways. Sherman asks a second question, quote, you guys recommend any books, websites, resources to help learn how to cap basketball, either NBA or college hoops? Thank you in advance for your time with this. Dave, how do you respond?
Good questions. Now let's work on some good answers. Yes, if you focus on the smaller conferences, you can get some edges. Now, not as big as it might have been a decade ago, because the mathematical ratings have gotten so much more sophisticated across the board. The internet allows access to information across the board. But what you want to focus on is not so much the math on those conferences, not so much the injury information. A lot of that's going to get out there anyway. It's the style matchups. And we talked about something yesterday like what happens when Jay Wright and Rick Pitino go head-to-head in a close game and those scramble ups. If you can get inside the heads of the coaches in these conferences, know their styles, know their peculiarities, know some matchup elements, yeah, you're going to have stuff that we don't know. You know, I can't tell you if Georgia State's playing NC Wilmington, if there's something inside the matchups of that particular game that could lead one team to be dominant over the other. Simply too many teams for us to cover every one the way that we want to. So yeah, your focus on those, get into those style elements. A couple of zone teams might work well against teams in that conference that don't shoot well from the perimeter. All sorts of little things that could come into play. And one of the things we'll get into in the next part of this discussion in terms of resources, study these team versus teams over the years. See if there's a coach versus coach pattern that you can take advantage of that will not be priced properly because the markets are still much more bottom line power rating oriented.
Yeah, and it's also important to note that, as Dave mentioned, there was a time in which you probably had a bigger edge in the smaller conferences than you did in the majors. I don't know that exists anymore. Frankly, when it comes to getting wagers down, the limits for a CAA game, a Colonial game, are the exact same as the limits for an ACC game. Makes no difference, or a Big Ten game, or an SEC game. So it's not necessarily you have to find a smaller conference to focus on. Just find a conference that you have a good read on, whether it's SEC, ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, or the Colonial, or the MAC, or the Metro, or any of these. It doesn't matter, especially as an amateur, someone who's doing something else full-time. It's hard to get a read on all of what's going on in college basketball. So I think that is a very good strategy to focus on a particular conference, but doesn't have to be a small one by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the second part of your question, we were asking about books and websites. Dave and I were talking before the show, and neither one of us could think of a book that's ever helped us in any way in terms of basketball handicapping, either NBA or college hoop. There just isn't a good book out there. And by the time that book was written, published, and read, most of what would be in it would be obsolete. It's something Dave and I have talked about before when I asked, why don't we write a book? Well, by the time we write it, everything will be out of date. But when it comes to good information, I'm going to give you two, I think, pretty good sources. And, of course, they're both homers. You know, covers.com with the matchup pages. You can go back and look at every matchup between these two teams, whoever's playing for the last 10 years. Look at the box score, break it down. It's really valuable stuff. The Covers matchup pages are dynamite when it comes to NBA and college hoops, both. I use them personally on a daily basis, and I encourage you to do the same. The other thing, watch Vegas Sports Day, man. I know we're not in book form. Still, if you watch this show every day, I think you're going to get a good tidbit or two on a daily basis. Sometimes that's better when you say, all right, I picked up a little nugget here, I picked up a little nugget there, as opposed to trying to pick up 50 things from a book, pick up one or two a day from watching this show. And you know what? By the end of the season, I think you'll be in pretty good shape.
If you do want to talk about books, again, there aren't any that are focused on handicapping per se that are any good. But you want to start every college season with the Blue Ribbon Yearbook.
Yep.
What's nice about that now is you can download it in a large PDF file and take it with you everywhere you go. I've got it sitting right here on the laptop if we need to look something up real quickly. The problem I had with the old Blue Ribbons, you tear the spine, pages be ripping out. And they were just sort of awkward because there was so much information there, an invaluable resource. In terms of looking for things online, we've talked about the Jeff Sagarin ratings and the Ken Pomeroy ratings a lot. That's a nice shortcut if you don't want to have to spend a lot of time doing the math ratings yourself. And it's not that they're necessarily that great, but it's the markets use similar models. So Sagarin and Pomeroy are going to get you on the right track in terms of getting to the good places with these teams, but also what the rest of the marketplaces are also looking at. If you look at the Pomeroy ratings every day, try to find a college basketball total more than 2 points off of that fan match total on the Pomeroy page. It just doesn't happen. It's like the markets have accepted that this is a good reference point for totals, so we'll go to it. But here are your little sleepers, though. Obviously, the newspapers for all of these teams. You like to find teams that get multiple writers that cover them, but don't be afraid to look at the student newspapers as well. Every once in a while, you'll find some gems. They'll give you little tidbits in breaking down a matchup or actually getting quotes from the players and coaches you wouldn't see elsewhere. We've had great runs in the Ivy League in the past because they have good writers. Some of these Ivy League papers are almost the equivalent of a professional daily newspaper. Those are invaluable to us. Last thing that we would suggest, now this can be cumbersome, but it's awfully good. You can get online to every school's athletic department now, and you can download for every game their full media kit. Now some of these are 40 or 50 pages, but it's going to be every stat on every player throughout his career. Great statistical reference points, and sometimes their athletic directors give you little hints you might not have found on your own. Certain team goes to a certain court trying to end their 18-game losing streak on that court. Invaluable. Yeah, it takes a lot of time to sort through it, but there are little things called bookmarks. And if you just carefully bookmark every school's athletic department the first time you go in, going back becomes a lot easier.
Hey, great question, Sherman. And please, guys, keep those emails coming. We're going to answer emails on a topical basis on just about every show. Email address, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now, covers.com/posting forum. And you know that in this segment, I'm pumping up the Super Bowl party. Hey, I want 500 people there. I want 1,000 people there. Show up. It's going to be fun. Free drinks, free food, free giveaways, contests, prizes, and a chance to hang with Malinsky and myself. If you want to go and you're going to be here in Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, that's Friday, February 3rd, 7:30 p.m., Caesars Palace in the Munch Bar. All you have to do, send an email, party@covers.com. Say, yeah, I'm coming, and I'm bringing 15 of my closest friends.
Okay, guys, you know those little buy signals you're always looking for to try to catch a team at the right time? You want to make sure they're not just smoke signals going out there. We're going to talk about that next in the postmortem.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hey, I'm Al Mann. Is that how you get them to do that all the time? Just sit there and be an ass. Is that it? Hey, I'm Al. Hey, I'm Al Mancini at Top of the Food Chain. You are watching the Vegas Video Network. We got big forks, big spoons. I got a big mouth. I got no guests.
Okay, let's scrub up. Get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem. We take you deep inside the game to show you the things you should be seeing, but probably aren't.
Earlier this season, we did a postmortem on Texas and noted that it might not be business as usual in Austin this season. With only two seniors on the roster and a few too many freshmen because of early outs went into the NBA before they were expected to go, it wasn't reloading. It was rebuilding for Rick Barnes and company. The process may not necessarily be working the way that Barnes had hoped. At 13-7, floor leader Jacoven Brown and the Longhorns have some hills to climb if they're going to be back in the big dance once again this year. Now, some of you might think they started their turn on Tuesday night getting a solid 62-55 win over Iowa State that ended a three-game losing streak and it avenged an earlier road loss to the Cyclones. But in this classic scenario, it's a classic scenario, really, when we talk about buying an established power as they kick their game into high gear and the sprint towards the tournament begins. But it may not be time to buy into Texas just yet. A brownout that had left them powerless throughout their losing streak may well still be in effect.
Now, be careful what might be a Texas turnaround notion. Again, the sort of thing we look for. Good program, good coach. Buy them when value's at the peak, when nobody else wants them. Here's the problem. That Iowa State win might show that the issues they have are getting worse instead of better. You've got 11 players on the Texas roster. Six are freshmen. Because of that, Jacoven Brown is having to carry a very big load for them. Played almost 100 more minutes than any other player, 97 more than Mick Cabongo, taking the bulk of their shots on offense. But now here's the problem. When you do that, you wear down. Last three games, 18 out of 70 from the field. Impact in Big 12 play, 34.5% shooting. That's bad if that's your leading scorer. So when we look at that Iowa State game as a Texas turning point, we have to look to Brown. Did he turn his game? No. He goes 3-for-16, and he has 5 turnovers, possibly his worst game of that entire cycle, because there were some times when it looked like he was clearly forcing. Let's take this from Coach Rick Barnes, because this really gets to the crux of the matter. He says, somebody's open when he drives. Coaches scout. They say, if he drives, collapse, because maybe he's not going to pass. It's a tough thing to say about your own player. But that's Barnes recognizing he's off his game a little bit. And if he's off his game, the whole team is in trouble. It's not the only case, though, where a key guy being off his game has a team in trouble. If you're Spike Lee or a Knicks fan, or if you have Carmelo Anthony on your fantasy team, boy, were you likely excited for a little while Tuesday night. Here comes a final score from Charlotte, 111-78. An overdue blowout that the team needed, the breakout that Carmelo Anthony himself needed, you're excited. We're on our way. And now here comes the box score. Anthony scores 1 point. He goes 0-for-9 from the field. Think, oh, maybe what we thought was coming didn't happen. And now here comes Wednesday. That Charlotte team you just blew out, they lost by 17 against the Wizards. That's not easy to do. Teddy and I, with Jacob, go out in the hall, and the first two people to come along, we could take him, head to Washington. We'll hang within 17. Maybe not win the game, but we'll hang the number. And what did the Knicks do off of that turnaround win at Charlotte? They go to Cleveland. They lose by 10. And if you're looking for some made shots by Carmelo Anthony, you got to really dig through that game film. So now the question, if you are believing in a Nick turnaround, instead the focus should be, can Carmelo make a turnaround? And that may be a long way off.
You know, sometimes we do some complicated math algorithms to show some unique insights into sports. And sometimes it's just damn simple. Look at this. Since trading Carmelo Anthony to the Knicks, Denver, 31-12 straight up. The Knicks, 21-25 straight up. That looks pretty simple. One team 31-12, one team 21-25. Who do you think got the better of that deal so far, at least? You know, here's a frightening part. It's not just a team issue, but the fact that Anthony is about as far off from his game as you may ever see a guy on his talent level. He injured his wrist in a loss at Memphis on January 12th and sat out the ensuing game. The 6 games since then have worth bearing some serious scrutiny. How about these numbers? Melo, 40 of 126 from the field. That's 31.7% shooting. 5 of 28 from three-point range. Yeah, that's 17.9% from beyond the arc. He has nearly as many turnovers, 18, as assists, 24. Let's just talk about that 31.7% shooting, just for a moment. If we prorated that for the full season, well, there are 110 NBA players who have qualified for enough shots to be qualified for the league lead so far. The bottom guy on the list is at 35.5%. Of those 110, Anthony, right now, he's ranked number 101 in terms of shooting for the full season. And the problem right now is as much mental as it is physical. Remember back to the start of the season where the Knicks were talking about using Anthony as a point forward and we're going to run the offense through him, and in some ways similar to what the Lakers used to do with Lamar Odom? Well, it sounds good, but Anthony's never played in an offense that used him that way. And a big part of the problem that he was going to have to do it because the Knicks' guards were so bad, not because it was particularly well-suited for his particular skill set. So where's Anthony's head right now? Well, here's a quote. When you're missing shots and they're right there and they're not going in, you say, maybe the next one, maybe the next one. That's the kind of mentality that you have. But maybe I need to stop shooting a lot. I don't know. It's just a bunch of stuff that goes through my mind right now. Here's what we need to do. We need to not just watch the Knicks results, but closely check how Carmelo is doing on a nightly basis. As bad as things have been for the Knicks so far this season, we're talking about a team that has played the single weakest schedule in the NBA thus far, ranked number 30 out of 30 teams in terms of strength of schedule difficulty. That's about to change. The Knicks have both the Heat and the Bulls on tap over the course of the next week. As we saw last night in Cleveland, following New York's win at Charlotte on Tuesday, one big win over a bad team really doesn't necessarily mean much at all.
Coming up next, you've got a big NBA doubleheader on TNT this evening. We're going to cover both of them. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
All right, guys, the play of the day has been on a pretty good roll this week. Let's see if we can keep it going with money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Orlando, where, ooh, we've got a revenge matchup. The Magic, minus 10 against the Boston Celtics this evening. This is the same Orlando team that got waxed in Boston earlier this week. They scored a franchise-low 20 points in the second half of that ballgame, 10 in the third, 10 in the fourth. We recapped it a little bit in an earlier show this week, talked about some of the issues that Magic point guard Jameer Nelson had against Avery Bradley in that matchup. Dave, do these same issues come into play tonight for Orlando, or is this a spot for them to get their revenge against Boston?
I like that revenge. That was pretty good. That was like a little Simon Legree out of a Saturday morning cartoon sort of thing. That was good.
It's what I think about when I try to get back in you and some of the stuff you've done to me on the show. I'm always like, revenge! Hasn't happened yet, though.
That makes me very scared. You always got to be careful in Vegas. You got to watch your back at all times. This is a stupid line. Let's just be, right up front with it. You can call Monday the Beantown beatdown. That was a massacre. We were going to say Boston Massacre, but that's already been used before. And the Celtics were shorthanded. They'll be shorthanded again tonight, probably no Ray Allen again, most likely no Rajon Rondo. That's why the 10s are starting to appear. But it shows the impact that revenge has in terms of the thought processes. Now, we're going to give it to you real clearly, so we don't have to go through this a lot. We find two settings where revenge works, only two. Regular season, what looked like flat games, where it might give one team an advantage over a flat opponent. And also where you have a big favorite in a game that controls the outcome. The idea being, especially in football, you got a 24-point favorite. The underdog doesn't have a whole lot of say in the game. The favorite can dictate whatever they want. If they've got revenge as a factor, they'll go out there and they'll lay the wood. National TV game between two big rivals who've knocked heads in the playoffs many times. How does Orlando have an edge over Boston? Boston hasn't played since Monday. They'll be focused. They'll be motivated. They've won back-to-back games, you know, for the first time in a while. They're getting on their game a little bit. Paul Pierce, finally back to health again. Last two games, 53 points, 13 rebounds, 17 assists. So Boston will come to play. Therefore, there's not that much of a revenge factor to Orlando. So let's put this line in perspective a little bit and show you how the revenge people have really stretched it.
Yeah. You look at the last 40 meetings between these two teams. And there's been 40 games between Boston and Orlando in the Dwight Howard era. You attach a minus 10 to the Magic in those 40 games. What does Orlando look like? 3-37 ATS. Yeah, they have notched 3 wins out of 40 by this margin. But the other 37, not so much. Now, the question also comes down to, well, what happened on Monday night in that Beantown beatdown, as Dave so eloquently described it a few moments ago? You know, 87-56, the final score. 23 turnovers for Orlando compared to 16 made field goals. They had 5 made field goals in the second half of that ballgame. 10 points in both the third and fourth quarter. And, of course, Dwight Howard, he was on the floor for 35-plus minutes in that ballgame. 9 different Magic players finished with a minus 10 or worse in their stints in terms of plus-minus points while they were on the floor. That would may well be an NBA record if there was a database to look such things up. And you wonder, was that just a situation, or is there matchup concerns here for Orlando that are every bit as great as the revenge angle might be the other way? Well, look at this quote from J.J. Redick. Speaks volumes about the Magic and some of their concerns about this Celtics team. Redick, quote, "We have trouble scoring against them. That's not a secret. They're a great defense, and we've had so many battles with them that they've kind of figured us out."
So sure, it makes sense. Let's go lay the wood with the Magic. Yeah, right. We'll have some of that 10 in our pockets as the day goes on. You don't have to hurry here. If Rondo's going to be out, you might even find a 10.5. It's a forced action on a TV game. Now let's go to the Staples Center, where when we last looked, Vinny Donegro was ordering a foul down 4 with 1.1 seconds left.
Bitter, Dave? Bitter? Just a little?
Just a little. Yeah, just a little. Bitter because it never should have got to that point. In terms of tonight, though, Memphis traveling to face the Clippers on that same court. The Clippers, a 3.5-point favorite. And we say it never should have got to that point. Clippers had the lead most of the game, and the floor game was terrific. They out-rebounded the Lakers by 6, and they had 4 fewer turnovers. Now, if you do that, plus 6 boards, 4 fewer turnovers, you're supposed to win. So why didn't they?
Well, was that you?
No, that's you.
Okay, good.
That's you.
This is why they didn't win. That we talked on the show yesterday about the big edge that the Clippers had at the point guard position. And in theory, they were supposed to have that edge. What happened last night? Well, Chris Paul, Chauncey Billups, Mo Williams, Randy Foy combined 11 of 41 shooting from the floor. That's a pretty ugly
point. That's Carmelo. That's a Carmelo night.
Yeah. It really is. But the bottom line, they just didn't make shots. And that will happen time to time in the NBA. Not something that necessarily carries over from one night to the next. But the bigger issue here, as opposed to the Clips, who coming off the loss last night, playing on the second night of back-to-backs, but still with a little hunger in their belly, we have to look at this Memphis team. A little bit right now. Now, the Grizzlies, 7-1 in their last 8 games. But during that span, the Bulls were the only team that they were able to beat with a winning record, and that was a revenge game that actually meant something. Of course, and Derrick Rose was out for Chicago in that contest. The other teams that Memphis beat during that span are a combined 26-65 straight up this year. We're not talking about a whole host of elite-level teams. Now, Memphis, 5 road games versus opposing teams with winning records, 0-5 straight up, 0-5 against the spread, and they've lost to the spread in those 5 games by 56 points, more than 11 points per game, ATS, against these quality teams on the road. And also worth noting, what does Memphis do? How does Memphis win? They force turnovers, 17.1 turnovers forced per game. That is number 1 in the NBA. Well, you're going to force a lot of turnovers against Chris Paul and Chauncey Billups? You're going to take this team out of their rhythm? Or is it the Clips who are likely to take away the Memphis strength that's certainly an issue.
Sounds like the type of game we may bring back later in the show, so get that catamaran ready. But before we set sail, we're going to head out to Honolulu. Can the Pro Bowl be beaten? Perhaps this year it can. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's start with a look at the college hardwoods for tonight. We're going to take a trip up to Madison, Wisconsin, where the money is pouring in on the Badgers. This line was -7 an hour ago. Guess what? It's up to -8 as Wisconsin takes on the Indiana Hoosiers, who the betting markets don't seem to know whether Indiana's the same team that was good enough to beat Kentucky and Ohio State on their home floor, or the same Indiana team that has gone through a bit of a reversal in fortunes now that they've gotten into the meat of Big Ten play.
We can go back to the postmortem a little bit and talk about what could be buy signals or smoke signals on a team. Indiana had lost 3 games in a row. They come out and they blow Penn State out on Sunday. Doesn't necessarily mean anything. That was a Penn State team that had just pulled a home upset of Illinois, maybe came out a little bit flat. So like Texas, Iowa State, like the Knicks against Charlotte, that last Indiana win may not necessarily mean anything. Yes, the Hoosiers are better. They are much more talented. They shoot the ball well. They distribute well on offense. Zeller's the real deal inside. But now here's the problem. In Big Ten, it's not just getting better players to win. You also got to get tougher players. What we haven't seen from the Hoosiers in their 2 conference road games, toughness. They go to Michigan State, blown out in double figures. They go to Ohio State, blown out in double figures. What had been good defensive stats to that point get turned inside out. Both of those teams scored 80 points. They both shot over 50%. They combined to shoot 54.5. Now, we say that 80, and we should say that pretty loud, because if you follow Big Ten basketball, you don't see a lot of 80s.
Nope.
Sometimes you'll see games where both teams combined figure they're not going to get to 80. Is it possible that Indiana has better shooters and better athletes, but just doesn't have that toughness yet to go and win on the conference road?
But there are real questions about Wisconsin right now, too. I mean, this is not a vintage Bo Ryan team. And we can look at it in a couple different ways. Let's look at the strength of this home court. We think of Madison as being one of the toughest places to play in the Big Ten, if not in the whole country. Well, so far this year, they've lost as home favorites against Marquette. They lost as a home favorite against Iowa. They lost as a home favorite to Michigan State. All of those outright dog wins in this venue. Look at what happened, when they played Nebraska a couple of weeks ago. Nebraska, not a very good team, +14 in the game. Cornhuskers were right in it through the final buzzer. They lost 50-45, wire-to-wire point spread cover for Nebraska in that contest. And really, the front court for Wisconsin just hasn't been very good this year. And we look at Jordan Taylor, who is the go-to player for Bo Ryan this year. Boy, we talk about heavy minutes and wearing down throughout the course of a conference campaign. There's eight Big Ten games for Jordan Taylor. He's played 38, 40, 44, 39, 35, 38, 37, and 39 minutes. Not a lot of bench time for Taylor so far this season. And what's happened? Well, as we talked about with Jacoven Brown in Texas, the shooting percentage goes down, way down. The team leader for Wisconsin, just 39% from the floor, just 33% from beyond the arc. Those are not the type of numbers that will be helpful if Wisconsin's going to cover this number this evening.
Let's head out to Honolulu for Sunday evening. Yes, we're going to talk Pro Bowl. Right now, the NFC, a 4-point favorite, total 73.5. We got into this a little bit on last week's show, saying how the college All-Star games and even the professional All-Star games can be beaten because they have to set a line. Even though you've got all these odd circumstances coming into play, they're forced to set a line. We're not forced to make a bet. These are when we have the biggest advantages. Is there an advantage this year? We think they may well be, because it's been building a little bit. Three of the last 4 years, the NFC wins this game, all those wins by at least 9 points. And throw away that final score last year. 55-40 looks easy. It was a lot easier than that. 42-7 at halftime. And if you aren't paying attention, it's 55-34 to the final play when they literally allowed a fumble to be returned for a touchdown on a play that looked like a setup. Said, let's do this. Let's have some fun. Let's let a defensive guy score. They were that much better. But here's the interesting part. If there's been a gap the last couple of years, that gap this year may be even wider, especially at the most important position on the field.
Yeah, I mean, look at the quarterback matchups in this one. For the NFC, you have Drew Brees. Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
He's good, yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, yeah, well,
he's good. Oh, yeah, I've seen him. He's good.
Yeah, yeah. Cam Newton coming on the field in the fourth quarter. Oh, no blitzing in this game. So Cam Newton's scrambling ability may be that much more impressive. And, you know, had a pretty impressive rookie year as well. That's the NFC quarterback rotation. Look at the AFC. Well, you have Phillip Rivers off of his worst season. You have Ben Roethlisberger, who's still not anywhere near 100% healthy. And you have Andy Dalton.
Who?
Andy Dalton. The Red Rifle.
Pro Bowl?
Yeah, Andy Dalton.
It's the Pro Bowl.
I'm well aware he's at the Pro Bowl.
Andy Dalton.
The Red Rifle. You got to call him the Red Rifle. It's such a good nickname. Andy Dalton, who is maybe a little bit of a drop-off from the guy he's replacing on the roster, some guy named Brady, who happens to be playing the following Sunday in the Super Bowl. So, no Peyton Manning, no Matt Schaub. Schaub was the MVP the last time the AFC won this game. No Tom Brady. You know, Brees and Rodgers, these are the type of competitors we like in this type of ball game. You know, guys with Super Bowl rings, guys that may bring a little, you know, I'm not going to say vengeance to the table, but they feel like they should be playing the following Sunday. Maybe a little extra effort from those two. And let's not forget, we talk about the losses that these two Pro Bowl rosters suffered because of who comes to the Super Bowl. The Giants only had two players make the Pro Bowl. New England, eight guys who now have to be replaced for the AFC.
And we find out now that it gets even worse for the AFC. Not only losing all of those New England players, but the Baltimore Ravens collectively said, nah, that's okay. We got better things to do. Ed Reed, Ray Rice, Terrell Suggs, Haloti Ngata, all not making this trip. Now, it happens two ways. One, of course, is you lose by not having those players there. But now you're calling reserves in who didn't expect to be making this trip. A guy like Ryan Clark and James Harrison from the Steelers, they just found out yesterday that they've got to fly out and play this game. Now, if you're Harrison and you're Clark, and you thought your season ended a couple of weeks ago in Denver, what kind of shape have you been in since that point? If you would have weighed Harrison on game day in Denver, put him on the scales right now, probably going to be a little bit different. So here are a couple guys being forced into action, didn't think they were going to play, get that rush flight out to Honolulu. They may not have quite the right chemistry, and chemistry does matter in a couple of different ways here. We talk about those NFC quarterbacks. How about having Mike McCarthy, the Green Bay coach, as the head man for the NFC, which means his own quarterback can help explain the playbook to the rest of those offensive players. For the AFC, it's Gary Kubiak. Oh, no match up. He's not there either. He doesn't have that same ability. It looks like we might be able to do something with the NFC here. They've been better the last couple years. So many of the best AFC guys aren't here. And it is a mismatch at quarterback. So, yeah, it's an all-star game. Yeah, fluky things are going to happen. But a little bit of value at that -4. And the best part is, before that game kicks off, your bankroll is going to be a little higher than it is right now. Why is that?
Because we got a play of the day for you today. We're not going to go to the Pro Bowl for this. We're going to go for action in the NBA tonight. It's a game we talked about a little bit earlier, and it's a game that features what we think is a pretty good situation and some pretty good matchups. That, of course, being the LA Clippers. Show that Cuddy Stark logo. The Clips minus the spot, -3.5 against what we feel is a little bit of an overvalued Grizzlies team. Take L.A. minus the points and pray Vinny Del Negro doesn't foul with 1.1 left here.
Pray he doesn't have to.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll look for the Clips to take care of business. Clippers -3.5. That's a Vegas Sports Day play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for our Thursday edition. Thank you so much, really, for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Merlinski, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck. We'll be back again for the weekend preview edition tomorrow.